And now, live from New York City via Los Angeles, California, it's time for The View from Over Here with the man who has a view for all seasons, your host, Stan Weisleder.
Let's hear your views.
My views? Wow. Okay, this is Stan Weisleder on The View from Over Here in the studio with Malcolm Barry Berman.
Very good.
In downtown glamorous Sunland, California. You've all heard about water shortages taking place in California, and now there's one in Iran. Well, I have a shortage for you. Venezuela. You've heard of Venezuela, the country? They're in the midst of a serious, very serious shortage of breast implants. Last year, Venezuelan physicians were able to perform only 85,000 breast implant procedures. Their doctors complained that the best implants come from the U.S., but regulations on monetary exchanges are preventing the female population of Venezuela from getting their boob jobs.
Well, that's very big in Venezuela because, yeah, I don't know if you know it or not, but a lot of the Miss Universe.
Well, all of South America, they, in fact, the government provides that and those jobs.
Well, as I say, in Venezuela, a lot of the beauty contestants, they have boob jobs. They take out their rib because then they have a narrow a waistline. They do nose jobs, they do eye jobs, they do everything. They do ear jobs.
So they make their own Barbie dolls.
They make their own Barbie dolls, and they've been very successful at it.
Well, very good. All right, we have another news item. This comes from overseas. You've all heard, maybe you've heard, maybe you haven't, that size matters, or does it? Anyway, in Germany, a man was accused of exposing himself. Then the man's wife testified under oath that her husband's organ was much too short to hang out of his pants as claimed by the woman who says that she was flashed. The presiding judge said, "We will get to the bottom of this," and he ordered the local health officials to measure the evidence before he renders his verdict.
But my question is the evidence, will it be while it's at its erect status or whether it be non-erect?
Why don't you send him an email and ask him?
Because I have spoken to various women during my life, and it seems that the size of the male organ changes a lot.
Well,
you don't seem to like this discussion.
For some people.
Well, I'll tell you, if you're out there, if you're a woman or if you're a man, if you have any comments on this, you know, please email us. It's malcolm@viewfromoverhere.com or stan@viewfromoverhere.com.
Send it to Malcolm.
Let us know your opinion because over many years, I think size does count.
Malcolm, when you're talking on the radio or TV, whatever, you should remember to say less. Okay, go right into the word or the sentence without hesitating with
And this topic, I do
Yeah, I've noticed. All right, let's get down to something more serious. The countries that make up the Mideast, as I see it, together with their arbitrarily drawn borders, were born after World War I, mostly out of convenience for the victors, rather than on truly ethnic or religious lines. As of late, the world and the U.S. has discovered that these ethnic and religious differences are more profound than anyone ever gave them credit for. Added to this dilemma is that the Muslims, or at least some of them, are still fighting the Crusades of 1,000 years ago. Added to this mix, or quagmire, is the fanatical hatred of the Muslims, most of them that is, towards the Jews who did in fact occupy the land they now reside in some 2,000 years ago. And even after ISIS is beaten, and they surely will be, the underlying problems will not go away. And while this gigantic smokescreen is obscuring everything else, Iran will finally be able to complete its production of fissionable material, and voila.
Right. Well, going back to what you were talking about at the beginning of the show, Iran is now asking the people to pray for water because they have a shortage there worse than ours in California.
I thought they're praying for plutonium.
No, they're... how can you bomb one area or do a nuclear bomb in one of the areas without contaminating your own country? I mean, Iran
depends
does a nuclear bomb in
Israel.
Depends
which way the wind is blowing.
And the wind blows all
maybe
different
when they
ways.
Get it, they'll test it in Israel. Who knows?
But they'll kill everybody. It's not only, the Israelis. They'll kill the entire Middle East.
Well,
will
depends
be a nuclear
which way
waste.
The wind is blowing. Or they could dig a big hole and do it underground like they do in Nevada, the underground test site.
Well, I think they should ask Allah to do their bidding for them. So he can kill all the Israelis without...
Well, I think we're having too much killing all around. It's just too much. It's got to come to an end. It has to stop.
When we're all dead. We'll become like the dinosaurs. Right, Paul?
Yeah, and then some alien spaceship will come here many years later and dig up the remains of the civilizations that once existed.
Well, a lot of people say that the aliens came way before, and they show evidence of it.
Maybe they did. Maybe we are related to aliens. Who knows?
We could do some DNA testing.
But what do you compare it with?
I don't know. We compare it to some of the fossils that we dig up.
Well,
they
the
do
fossils,
constantly. They have DNA, don't they? The bones?
Yeah,
they scrape
but
the bones.
If we share DNA with fossils, that just means we and the fossils came from Earth. There's nothing to compare it with an alien being.
I will take that up with my scientific friends, and we will come to a conclusion.
Yeah, you got to do that. Listen, I want to talk. We have a very special guest on today. And Paul,
he's trying to get them now.
He's trying to get him now. Okay, while he's trying to get him, let me tell you who he is. Most of you have heard of him, and some of you haven't. Okay, and his name is Edwin Washington Edwards, Governor Edwin Washington Edwards. He is a man who needs no introduction. If he should ever change his middle name, I can think of only one suitable replacement, and that is controversy.
Why would you say it's controversial? Just because
he's been in and out of it his entire political life. And to summarize, he is a man who says what he means and means what he says.
Well, listen, a brief background. I think he just celebrated his 87th birthday.
87, shortly. I think it was in August. Yeah.
And he's been governor for four terms.
Four separate terms.
Not consecutively.
But four terms, governor of Louisiana. And he's running now for Congress.
And the controversy was he was convicted of not laundering money, but accepting bribes.
Well, he says he's innocent, and I tend to believe him.
No, I tend to believe him also, but he was convicted, and he had been serving time at the federal prison and just released, I think, in 2011.
And he got married. I believe we have him ready. Governor, are you with us?
Bacon.
Okay, great. So my first question to you is, how are you and your family doing?
Doing fine. I'm in good health, 87 years old. I have a 14-month-old baby who's in good health. My beautiful 36-year-old wife is doing well. The campaign's going good. I've been blessed.
I have a question for you, Governor. This is Malcolm Berman. Why? I mean, after all this time and what you've been through and all your years, in public service as governor and congressman, why do you want to go back to Congress?
because I feel like I have something to offer, and I think the country needs people such as I who have an understanding of the workings of government and who is willing to make principled compromise in order to make things happen. I'm very concerned about the stalemate and gridlock in Washington. Nothing is happening, and I think I have experience dealing with conflicting opinions in people, and I can make things happen by principled compromise, and it's my life's work. I mean, just like old farmers and old doctors and old radio people don't want to quit simply because they get old, it's what I like to do, and I have the support of my family and many friends, and I'm gonna serve. I have a role to fill.
I have a question for you, Governor, okay? With the exception of your young son, does your family agree with your decision to run for office?
My family on political affairs has always taken the position that I was the candidate, I knew what I was doing, and my record of success proves that, and they have always supported whatever decisions I made about the campaign or my desire to participate in one. However, they didn't have that attitude about everything, but politically, in campaign, they figured that they should defer to my opinion, and while they offer theirs, they're always willing to accept whatever decisions I make.
Well, you're a Democrat running now in a predominantly Republican district. What do you think your chances are?
Well, it's not a Republican district. The registration is equal, 47-47. But it is a conservative district, no question about that. However, I'm conservative. I'm liberal on social issues because I think government should get out of people's lives and let people live as they want to live as long as they don't hurt anybody else. But in the years that I served as governor, the budget was always in balance. We paid school teachers, bus drivers, and lunchroom workers. People were working. We had a balanced budget, and I made the affairs of the state run well. I'm a conservative person insofar as running the fiscal affairs, not only of my family, but of my government.
Do you think that you could be effective, let's say if elected, in this the House right now, which is controlled by Republicans?
Oh, let me be honest. I don't expect to go up to Washington and change it overnight, nor to move it to any great length. But I do think that there's a different attitude coming now in the country. People are getting fed up with the Republican and the Democratic leadership. They want somebody who can make things happen, and I'm the guy.
Well, okay. Now, if you win, okay, assuming you win, do you think you'll do as well as when you clobbered David Duke?
I'm sorry?
Well, if you win, do you think you'll do as well as when you clobbered David Duke?
Well, no, not in this district. I expect to win, but by a narrow majority, because it's a very conservative district, and I have the problem of my incarceration, which haunts me, even though it's unfair. Nevertheless, I have to live with it, and I expect to win, but I do not see any landslides.
Okay, Governor, if you hold on for a minute, I hear our music. Hold on, and we have to break away for a few commercials. And hold on, and we'll be right back with you. You're listening to The View from Over Here, heard on crntalk.com. You can hear us on www.viewfromoverhere.com, and you could email us at stan@viewfromoverhere.com or malcolm@viewfromoverhere.com, and we'll be back in a few minutes.
Okay, we are back on The View from Over Here. This is Stan Weisleder in the studio with Malcolm Barry Berman. And we have as our special guest for the week, Governor Edwin Washington Edwards. Governor, I understand that you are moving on to something else right now, and your time is kind of limited. So let's get to some of the more direct questions. Is that okay with you?
Go ahead.
All right. Do you care to comment on what a lot of Americans have been thinking as of late, which is the seemingly lack of decisiveness and altering of posture on the part of our president in dealing with the situation in the Mideast, or do you think he has it all under control?
Let me be honest with you. I'm in Louisiana. I've never been to the Mideast. I don't know what's happening there, and it would be unfair of me to second-guess what he's doing because I assume that he's got first-rate intelligence. The only thing I'll say is that we need to do something. IRIS needs to be stopped where they are and not allowed to expand any further. We need to make sure that Iran does not develop nuclear weapons. And all I can say with my limited knowledge, and I acknowledge that, is we need to put our foot down and make a decision of where we stand and how far we're going to let them go.
Would you consider troops on the ground or boots on the ground?
In finding those terrorists, in my opinion, everything is on the table. We need to do whatever we need to do to stop them, because if we don't, some 41 different groups of terrorists are dedicated to destroying our way of life and destroying us. Not Islams now. I mean, not Muslims necessarily, or people who of the Islam religion, but crazy people who happen to be in that religion. But whoever they are, whatever they are, and whatever religion they are, they need to be stopped before they come over here and kill more Americans.
Now, a lot of people say that you're running for the Congress would be a stepping stone for you getting back into the governor's seat. Is there any truth to that?
No. None at all. I would have run for governor had I been permitted to do so, but I'm barred by state statute, so I'm doing what I can do. There's a vacancy here in the congressional seat, and I'm going to make an effort to serve people in this area in Congress.
But just to follow up on that, there is also questions whether you would challenge that law, because that would be retroactive, because I understand the law was enforced while you were incarcerated.
I thought about it when I first got out, and I'm of the legal opinion, although I'm not that good of a lawyer. I was a lawyer for many years, but I'm of the legal opinion they would not apply to me because it was passed and implemented after I was sentenced and after I was in prison, and it would be retroactive in a punitive way, which is prohibited by federal and state constitutions. But I determined not to do that because I didn't want to engage in the fight.
I have a question for you, another question. If you are elected, what would be your position on immigration, for one thing?
First of all, secure the border. Everybody agrees on that. I'm not prepared to tell you how to do it, but we have Army and Navy, Air Force, National Guard, and state police, all of whom could be used for that purpose, whatever it takes. Second, as far as the children that are here, I think we ought to offer them for adoption. Many of them have siblings or parents or relatives that would be willing to adopt them, educate them, give them a good home, and make useful citizens out of them. But those that can't be adopted or will not be adopted, we need to return to their native country. And we need to do that at their expense. How? We have foreign aid to all those countries that are sending those children here. We'll just take it out of what we owe them when we settle with them at the end of the year.
Good idea.
Do you have any thought?
It's not our responsibility to pay for that.
That's true. Governor, do you have any ideas or comments regarding the profits of the oil companies? In other words, reducing their profits and passing it on to the consumer.
I'm sorry, I don't understand the question.
Well, everybody says that the oil companies are earning too much. They post quarterly profits in the billions. What do you think about cutting back on their profits and passing it on to the consumer?
Well, that's certainly a consideration. You know, when I became governor in 1971, oil was selling for $8 a barrel. Now, admittedly, there's been a great deal of inflation and escalation in cost of producing. In those days, oil could be found at narrow depths and on safe dry land. Now most of the production comes from in the deep waters or from
Excuse me, Governor. I hate to cut you off, and I know you have to run.
It's that music again. Governor, can you be with us about another few minutes after this commercial break?
No, I'm sorry. They're calling me now.
Okay, then you'll have to come back. We'll give you a buzz and reschedule you.
And call me back.
Okay, thank you very much. That's your cue, Stan.
Oh, boy, my cue again. Okay, this is Stan Weisleder on The View from Over Here, and I am in the studio with Malcolm Barry Berman, and we just had as our special guest for the week.
For the beginning of the show.
Our special guest of the week, ex-governor Edwin Edwards, or Edwin Washington Edwards. His little name there is U, E-W-U. That's how his some people refer to him, U.
You're running for Congress at the age of 87.
87. He has a brand new wife at age, what did he say, 36?
Yeah, she was born, I think, in 1978, it said.
Yeah, and
so his kids are older.
He has a son less than 2 years old.
I wanted to talk to him about that, but we didn't have a chance. He had a run. We'll have him back on the show.
Yeah, and he was very interesting. I like the way he talks about things. Anyway, we have another guest on. Paul, how are we doing?
He's ready.
He's ready.
Peter,
okay.
Are you there?
Yes, sir.
All right. We have also as our guest today, Peter Lemongello. Okay, he is a singer. And I remember him very well from years ago, and he's been a little, Peter, why don't you tell us about what you've been doing as of late?
Well, actually, in the last year, I've been writing information that's going to lead to a documentary. And the reason for that is because there's been some interest in doing a documentary based on the fact that what I did was considered the first infomercial. And what I did is go on TV and sell an album in 1976, and we had enormous success because we sold over 1 million albums.
Yeah, are you on a cell phone?
No.
Oh, we seem to have a little trouble with this connection, but hope our listeners can get through it. So you're doing now, you're getting ready to do this documentary, or you're writing up something that would be made into a documentary. Do you have backers for this?
Well, there's a company in California that approached me. The man who wrote the movie, or screenplay, excuse me, for Coming to America.
Oh, that was a funny movie.
Barry Blaustein. Yeah. He's the one that is procuring or producing the documentary. Yeah.
Well, Peter, in other words, I have you to blame for all these infomercials on the air promoting music. That's I have cable TV, and if it's late at night, that's all I hear.
It's very possible that I'm the culprit. And the reason is, prior to my commercial, and even now in most cases, when you see a record album or a record offer of any kind, whether it's from Time Life or whoever it is, they are constantly doing what they call a crawl, meaning they're running song titles in front of your eyes, up the screen, from bottom to top. And when I was filming my commercial, the guy filming it said to me, okay, give me the song title so we can create this crawl. I said, well, I don't want one. He said, what do you mean everybody has one? I said, well, you don't understand. I'm unknown at this point, and so are my records, so are my songs. So why would I give up having my face on the screen, have it blocked by unknown song titles? I said, are you going to run unknown song titles in front of an unknown face? I only have 2 minutes on the air. I think I want to use all of them to try to sell myself. So that's how it happened. Being I was paying for the commercial, I had the right to do that. And it ended up being the first music video.
Fantastic.
And that was back in 76.
Yes, sir.
Where in Florida do you live now?
Boca
Boca. Okay.
Are you still producing records or music or singing? Or?
Well, I still perform in Atlantic City. I perform in various places here in Florida and other states, but mostly casino work and condominium work at this point.
Do you have a website where people can go in and find out where you'll be appearing?
Yes. It's P. Lemongello, meaning my first initial, P, then LEMONGELLO.com.
And that will have a list of all the you're performing. Will you be in Los Angeles at all?
Everything, Mike. It has my Tonight Show appearances, everything you can think of.
Who did you appear with in the Tonight Show? Was that Johnny? Johnny Carson?
Well, yes, and Don Rickles when he was the host, and Bob Newhart. I was on 25 times over the years.
Wow. It's a lot of exposure.
I was on with Joey Bishop, all the big comics who hosted the show, actually.
Well, that's very good. That's terrific. Now, tell me, in what you're doing now, you mentioned that you're doing the condos. Is that the condo circuit in Florida?
Yes.
Okay.
Which is a very big venue.
Yeah, I know. Usually I'm down there in March, and I try to see as many as possible.
A lot of people don't realize technically the Catskills moved here.
Yes. That was going to be my next statement.
Well, one of our guests and Stan's friends is, what's his name?
Howie Rapp.
Howie Rapp.
Oh, I was with him just the other day at their annual, what was it? It wasn't Rosh Hashanah. New Year's. Is that Rosh Hashanah?
Rosh Hashanah, yeah.
Rosh Hashanah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Pretty good for a Catholic kid, right? Remember that?
Yeah. Hey, if we go back far enough, we're all the same.
Of course we are, yes. And especially Catholics and Jews, we are all the same.
Well, it's the same thing. I had a good friend growing up. I'm Jewish and was Italian. Same family. The mother says, wait till your father comes home. And the father comes home and he says, what do you want me to do? You know, I'm tired. I worked the whole day.
Anything they say about Jewish mothers, you can easily relate to Italian mothers.
Right? Yeah, and then the Italian mothers say, mangia, mangia, eat, eat. The Jewish mothers say, es mein Kind, eat. Everything is based on food.
Very good. I like that. So anyway, I'm sorry, you asked a question.
Peter, do you also do the cruise lines?
You know, I did years ago, quite a few of them. But to be honest with you, I don't enjoy it. So I haven't done it in many years.
Why is that?
Well, because, to tell you the truth, when you're a performer on a ship and you're the headliner, you have nothing to do but your show. And that's only once a week. So if you're on the ship for 6 or 7 days, it's pretty hard to keep busy.
Are you a single man or a married man now?
Married.
Married. Okay, so that leaves out half of the activities you can
do on
shipboard.
Well, you can take your wife with you and make it a vacation for the other 6 days.
I did, and what ended up happening is we ended up having a baby.
Well, I know what you did during the break time.
I mean, let's face it, you can eat 10 times a day on a ship if you're fast enough.
So
but
you,
even that gets old.
You gamble, eat, and make babies. Well, that's not a bad deal.
Gambling on a ship isn't real gambling, at least not in Vegas terms.
No, it isn't. No, it isn't. And if you're appearing on the ship, part of the staff, I guess you'd call it, you're not allowed to gamble.
No.
Yeah, that's right.
Because I guess they figure you get too friendly with the people that work in the casino, and there would be a chance of them being taken.
Well, yeah, and should you win, you don't want to take away all of their profits.
I think this is a total different philosophy than Vegas. I remember Vegas; they wanted the actors to or the
mingle.
Top billing. They wanted them to gamble because then they could lose back the money that they paid them.
Well, no. Vegas and Atlantic City totally different. They definitely encourage gambling.
Yeah, they want the people to see the performers gambling, so they'll want to elbow next to them and lose money as well.
My friend Vic Damone told me that he once worked Vegas for 6 months and didn't get paid.
He left it all at the table.
Well, yeah, he had gambled so much. They gave him about $3,000 a week to live on, but the rest of what he earned, they took to pay off the gambling debts.
Yeah, well, I hear they pay you all the exorbitant money, especially to I remember we're going back a while to Sinatra and
Sammy
Davis.
Times have changed,
because
Malcolm.
They brought the heavy rollers in.
Oh, they did. by comparison, for example, Frank Sinatra drew spenders that actually transformed the whole hotel as far as earnings. People that parked cars who normally made $800 a week made $4,000 a week when he was there. It's really true. So some entertainers brought big spenders, and some filled the place, like Elvis Presley, but didn't bring spenders, bring gamblers.
Peter, tell me, do you have any gigs coming up in L.A. or Las Vegas or New York?
No. We're headed for Atlantic City for March and April. I have about 8 weeks there.
Now, there have been some articles in the papers about Atlantic City having some troubles, including Trump, and laying off a lot of people. Is that true?
Yes. I know that one of the hotels I used to work at, the Hilton, changed its name to the Atlantic Club, and they closed. Trump Plaza closed. The Showboat, another place I worked at many times, and the Revel have already closed this year.
Well, what do you think the problem is?
Four of them have closed, and I think Taj Mahal is supposed to close next month.
Well, what do you think the problem is?
It's really simple. It's really simple. They can't support. There's too much competition to support 11 or 12 hotels anymore. Years ago, they were the only game in town, so of course they flourished. But today, people can go to Philadelphia, you can go to New York, they could go to Baltimore, Maryland.
Yeah, and just think, if you were part Indian, you could set up your own casino.
Oh, I tell you, I would. If I had it all to do over again, rather than be of Italian descent, I would like to be Cherokee.
But not 100 years ago.
No, I don't want to fight the cavalry. But I mean, I'd like to be in on the casino action.
Well, I hate to tell you, I think in Las Vegas originally, if you're Italian, you were in the casino act. I won't go into that now.
Yes, I know. I can't talk about that.
Well, where are you originally from?
I'm from Jersey City, New Jersey.
Jersey.
All right.
Jersey.
So it's like New York, same thing.
Oh, it is. It's you know, when we were kids, when we got to be a little bit older, we were able to, for very little money, jump on what they called the tubes, which was a subway from Journal Square.
I know the tubes.
Yeah, from Journal Square in Jersey City right to Manhattan.
Yeah, because that's because
it took about 3 or 4 minutes. All you did is go under the Hudson River.
Yeah, that's because in Jersey you had to be 21 to drink. In New York at that time was 18.
18, exactly.
So,
why it was so popular to go to New York.
Yeah, but at 18 they could draft you and you could get killed.
Well, I had that problem too. I was drafted in 1966 and ended up going to Vietnam for a year.
Yeah. So did you see action there?
Yes, I did.
Did you feel that changed you a lot when you came back home? Because a lot of people had a hard time adjusting.
Well, it's difficult for many reasons. One of them is that you carry a lot of it back with you as far as nightmares and fear of every time you go to sleep, you think you're being sent back there. And that was difficult to adjust to. But also that we were mistreated when we came back. We weren't expecting a parade, but we certainly weren't expecting to be spit on.
Yeah, I remember that. Tell me, when you were in Vietnam, what unit were you with?
I was with a first logistical command in Saigon, and then we traveled all over the country. So I was in as far south as Canton, as far north as Da Nang, and Pleiku.
All right, so you didn't sing to entertain the troops.
I did for 2 months. The other 8 months I was not able to do. You could only do it for 2 months. And what they did when we traveled as a entertainment unit is they sent us to the places the USO couldn't go to.
Ah.
Because we could go to the unsecure places, and the USO could only go to the most secure places they had. So in order to give entertainment to the troops that were in the worst possible areas, they sent soldiers to do it. And I was one of them.
Now, back to the entertainment business. So, what would you say is the biggest change change in marketing or singing from when you started till now?
Well, okay. Let me answer the marketing part of that question first. When I did it, there was no cable TV in 1976. So, when I did it, there were only 6 stations to cover, and it was pretty easy to blanket the New York market and then California and Vegas, you know, L.A. and Vegas. Because there was so few there were so few stations. Today, with hundreds of stations and people taping things and fast-forwarding through commercials, I don't know how it could be done. I don't know, you would never make the impact that I made. I covered, we started, I mean, our plan was a demographic group from 24 to 54, female. But we really caught everybody from little children to old men and grandmothers to very young teenagers. So we had a lot of success where we didn't even realize we were going to get it.
Peter, I have two questions for you. Well, I have more, but two at least that are right in my mind right now. Number one, do you have dates set up yet for your condo circuit for, let's say, this coming fall or winter or whatever?
Yes, we start on November 1st at a place called Century Village in Deerfield Beach. And we have others that we're going to post, but right now that's the only one we have posted.
All right, next question. You've been around a lot. You've toured a lot. You've been on the stage with a lot of people, other people. Tell me, are there any salacious or interesting stories that you can or would like to share with us and our listeners?
Well, you know, for 2 years before I became famous myself, I was the opening act for Don Rickles. And I could tell you that all the stories you hear about how rough he is on stage and how mild he is off stage are really true, because he's the nicest guy in the world on stage, off stage. I mean, off stage. On stage, he appears to be
a killer.
A dragon.
Basically, what's called nasty. Anyway, hold your thoughts.
He was just the fastest thinker I have ever seen.
Okay. Yeah, don't go away, Peter.
Peter, we
have
this. Music?
What would you call it? An annoying commercial break. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The View from Over Here, heard on crntalk.com. And you can hear us www.viewfromoverhere.com, all the back shows. And we'll be back in a little while with Peter Lemangelo.
This is Stan Weisleder on The View from Over Here, together with Malcolm Barry Berman in the studio. And our guest right now is Peter Lemangelo. Peter, still with us,
yep,
right?
I sure am.
All right, listen, another question for you. As a singer, you generally come on the act or warm up or whatever with somebody who is a comedian or maybe something that somebody who does something that you don't do. So were you ever on the same show or doing the same thing or same gig or whatever with Joan Rivers or Robin Williams, who are both comedians, obviously?
No, I've worked with Buddy Hackett, Bob Newhart, as I said before, Don Rickles, Rich Little, so many. And technically 100 comics have opened for me over the years. Since Love 76 happened. So I really, Joan Rivers, I know I worked with, but I think it was on The Tonight Show.
Okay. Who would you say, as far as singers go, who is your idol? Who would you like to be if you had another persona?
Wow, that's a tough one. I would have to say that my favorite singer is Vic Damone. Sinatra, of course. Technically, as far as the ability... Huh. To do anything perfectly.
How about in today's world? How about in today's world? In the current crop of singers?
Yeah, like, do you do rap?
No. In fact, I thought that rap wouldn't last when I heard it first time.
Hey, people said rock and roll wouldn't last.
Yeah, but when I heard rap, I said, well, this one's not going to last, which means if I had been alive, I would have bet Germany in World War II. Because I'm usually wrong. So, today, give me, I'll do that as a multiple choice. Give me three names and I'll tell you which singer I like.
Well, Frank Sinatra, naturally. Yeah. Dean Martin.
No, I meant Dean Martin was the best that ever lived. He was the best singer and most versatile entertainer I've ever known.
Well, are you talking about singers today?
Yeah, you said who today?
Tony Bennett is still going strong. No, in fact, he's appearing with Lady Gaga.
But he's the ilk that I come from. So
yeah. Okay, he's Italian.
I'll tell you, I don't know the singers today because I don't listen to the music.
Me either.
But I know I have two teenagers, 18 and 19, and they're constantly listening to the radio. Well, actually, they're not listening to the radio. What they do is they record all their music on their iPads iPods.
I have a better one for you. My youngest daughter, who is like in her 40s, early 40s, she thinks Frank Sinatra is classical.
My God. He's only dead 16 years.
Speaking of dead, her favorite music is The Grateful Dead.
The Grateful Dead. That's a
Thank you. I was a big fan of theirs.
Anyway, Peter, you hear the music.
And if you believe that, I have some swampland to sell you down here.
Good. Hey, listen, Peter, we want you to come back. We're going to book you again. And I like your accent. It tells us you're from New York. And
as both of us are. Anyway, thank you very much. And we'll have you back for another show. Definitely.
It's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Anyway, you're listening to The View from Over Here, heard on crntalk.com. And we've reached the end of the show. If you liked anything that you heard or you have any questions, please email us at malcolm@viewfromoverhere.com or stan@viewfromoverhere.com or Twitter us. I don't know what or tweet us. But I'm not sure what my Twitter number is. We have to ask Pam about that and post that on our website. Anyway, thank you much, and we will see you next week.
Isn't tweet and Twitter the same thing?
I have no idea. Bye-bye.
You could tweet your Twitter.
The View from Over Here is a co-production of Infinity X and TBG International. For further information, contact Malcolm Berman at 818-687-2784. That's 818-687-2784.